activities and human interaction. Bonjour et welcome to Chat from the Mat, conversation inspirée de yoga with le grand Brian McRae Davis.
Are you ready?
Yeah, let's just, you know, let it all flow, because we're yogis and we're flowing here
That's
live.
In this episode, I have a conversation with Dalian, a.k.a. 13 Hands. If the name sounds familiar, it's because 13 Hands provides the music that we use in the opening and closing of each episode. Dalian is the yang, the businessman and the hustler. 13 Hands is the yin, the yoga teacher and the musician. He found yoga when he was fighting a series of diseases, taking care of some sick grandparents, and trying to work a handful of jobs. Yoga came to him through ESPN from 6 to 9 a.m. every day, and he followed it religiously. Dalian talks about some of the challenges throughout his life that shaped him, including a head injury as a child, losing his father at 15, and then losing all of his possessions 2 years ago in an apartment fire. He talks about having a plan, but being sure that you're flexible enough to adapt when the opportunity comes your way. He mentions finding the balance in the yoga, the relationship between the root and the spirit, and also making sure that every dollar you earn is an honorable dollar. He describes his yoga class as being conversational with laughter and anatomical details. Each class is specific to the students that show up, so there's no plan before the class begins, and each class ends with a long shavasana and music. Now, this was a really long conversation and very enjoyable, and so I split it up into two episodes, so you're getting the first half right now. You'll find a lot of information for him in the show notes, including his website, which is on Bandcamp, his Facebook page, a link to a TED Talk that he gave. In the course of the conversation, he mentions three different places in this first episode, the USA Shaolin Temple in New York City, the Hippocrates Health Institute in Florida, and the Kula Kamala Foundation and Yoga Ashram, which is focusing on therapeutic yoga education, and you will find links to all those in the show notes as well. I really enjoyed the conversation, and I hope you do too.
I am here with Dalian. Am I pronouncing that right?
Alien with a D. Dalian.
Dalian.
A.K.A. 13 Hands.
A.K.A. 13 Hands. So the 13 Hands is the your musical expression.
I would say if you had left brain, right brain, yin and yang,
okay,
masculine, feminine, you know, I'd say that the 13 Hands is what is associated with more of the creative, musical, chanting, spiritual use of music and sound, where then, you know, Dalian is tied to the whole nomad yoga, and the yoga service is tied to teaching and workshops and all the various education that I do.
All right, we've got a lot to cover.
Oh, boy.
In this hour.
Well, whatever. We'll go wherever it takes us.
We will.
Cruise control.
All right, so let's start. I met you, I met you at last year at the Love Light Yoga Festival. But you've known my wife, Chris, long before that.
Yeah, I'd say at least probably over the last decade or so, just passing an occasional, hey, how are you? Nice to meet you at, you know, various events and different festivals in the tri-state area. And so, you know, we've always, there's a lot of us that are on each other's radars. And so when we finally do meet for a moment at some random event or a workshop or a festival, it's kind of like, hey, nice to meet you. Heard great things. And it's like, oh, here's my car. You know, and we just keep passing like ships in the night because we're, you know, we're hustlers. We're yoga hustlers. We're trying to just create some kind of authentic teaching, you know, business model so that we can eat. Mm-hmm. You know, that's, you know, a lot of us had college educations and we got a degree. And now me, I'm banging a gong for a living and teaching yoga. I'm like, huh? You know, but it's interesting how life, you know, I tell my college students to just like, you got your degree, study, figure things out, have a sketch, not a plan that's too rigid. Just be flexible because at 28, there'll be a fork in the road that might take you down an entirely different path. Well, you'll use everything you've learned, everything you've done. You'll draw from your degree or the college experience, but now you're refining and stepping into a whole new path. And it's about trusting. I think that's the hardest part for all of us to know. Okay, here I am. I got this finance degree and I'm working on Wall Street or whatever. And then all of a sudden something happens at 28, an epiphany, Cirque du Soleil, you know, and to be able to just see the breadcrumb trail and let the breadcrumbs fall and trust that maybe, you know, you want to do what you want to do, but maybe the universe and the planet has something it needs you to do.
Right.
So that's always the conversation.
So you teach college as well?
I have been a professor of yoga for 15 years at Montclair State University, and I put in the best resume. No, this is the, like, it's funny, like, my life, if we talk, I sometimes laugh at just this whole idea of trusting the breadcrumb trail, because, you know, you don't put a resume in to apply for professor of yoga. It was a position that had existed through the phys ed department.
Seriously?
Yeah. Huh. And a lot of, see, there's a lot of these GER, general requirement classes. They're for, you know, English classes, writing classes, history classes. So whatever your major is at any college, there are different GER classes. It just so happens that MSU has these phys ed classes. So you can take like ballroom dancing, swing dancing, anything to fulfill that one credit requirement for physical education in your undergraduate degree. So I just got a phone call. And I almost didn't get the gig because I thought I was being punked. I thought it was a joke. But it was this, who was it? I don't think it was my chairperson. It was, I forget who the person was. It was a female person from the department. And they just said, Daniel McBride, how are you? I'm like, yeah, hi, how are you? And it just, and I just didn't know why are you calling? He's like, well, your name came up in a conversation. The person who's been teaching yoga here as part of the phys ed department is leaving, and your name came in, and we saw an article in the newspaper about how you cured yourself of Crohn's and colitis and all these health problems. And the person who's recommending you said you bring a lot of life experience to teaching yoga because you've been through a lot. And we thought you might want to come in and have a conversation and see if this might be a fit for both of us. And I said, that was the second conversation. When she first called and said, we have this position, I was like, I don't believe you. You busted, and I hung up, and they called back. And then we had the conversation and said, okay, talk to me. And then I was just like, all right, well, let's come over, tea, some tea, talk to me. And I do better in person. I'm much better interpersonally. You know, I like to do, when I'm talking business or anything that's about career, just let's get in front of each other and have a sincere human sure. back and forth. I don't do email negotiation. We start it and then we meet and have the thing. So it ended up, and here I am 15 years later. I don't think I've been hired. I don't think I've stayed at a job for 15 years for anyone. But it, you know, it's very rewarding because I guess karmically, right? We talk a lot about yoga and karma and the different things you have to experience during your lifetime. I know when I was 19, my whole body was falling apart. I had the Crohn's, the colitis. It was just a mess. I was literally dying in my early 20s. So I think I was put there. So once I was well, the opportunity presented itself, and I'm just like, wow, isn't this interesting? So, you know, anyone who knows anybody who's in the yoga world trying to make a living and a career, you know, we're the kings and queens of part-time income, like multiple streams of tertiary revenue.
That would absolutely. Be the,
right? For all you business novices out there, keyword, tertiary. Tertiary streams of revenue. That is your goal. It's you have to try to find various services and skills that you possess and then figure out a way to create a painter's palette of options and different programs and services so that they all miraculously at the end of the year add up to a gross income number.
Hopefully higher.
Hopefully higher than, you know, what you were doing at a 9-to-5. But it takes, you know, it takes a certain type of chutzpah and, you know, marketing and able to pick up the phone and actually then present and teach and then do all the behind the scenes work and accounting and man, I mean, it's,
so are you suggesting that teaching yoga, it's not just teaching yoga, it's there's other stuff besides standing
up? Oh yeah, it's magical. You just walk in on a carpet and you float in and teach and that's it and everything works out. No, part of the yoga is root chakra. So many of us that are spiritual and we're doing yoga, we're improving ourselves to be spiritual beings, we got to get that shit in the root chakra. We got to walk it. We got to get it in the legs. That's the whole point. You don't want to be upper chakranated and not lower chakranated, or too lower chakranated and not upper chakranated.
You know? Balance.
Balance. Right. Well, Bernie Madoff was obviously a 3-2-1, you know, me, money, money, money. And I don't know if he had his heart chakra, you know, flowing with the way he conducted himself. You know, as a yoga person, you're working hard because I think we have a trust in this whole spiritual process of becoming more inner, going in and understanding ourselves from an intuitive place. And that's deep. And a lot of us are on that path because we've had some hardship. We've faced some tough things. And so you start to question. And that's normal. But the challenge for anyone who's a yoga practitioner or a spiritual person is to make sure that there's a healthy relationship with the root element, so that when you try to make a living, you look at it as, I tell everybody, make sure that every dollar you make is honorable. Honorable dollars.
Yeah.
Integrity. You don't pull a Bernie Madoff. You don't, you know, you have, the ego is an animal, man, and it's trying to get it in the right relationship so that the heart energy is the gasoline that fuels your pride and your passion to want to go out and be of service, because we're social workers. Plain and simple. To me, anyone who teaches yoga, we're social workers. You know, we're lower back social workers. We're, you know, myofascial, fascia release social workers. You know, there's, as long as we come at it from a place of just like, hey, we are contributing to this incredible consciousness shift in man and all of humankind, merely by just helping people master their parasympathetic nervous system response.
Yeah, it's an interesting point where, you know, you talk about having the money, feeling good about the money you're taking in.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of people, it's not just about not being ashamed of it, but not just finding that neutral ground. Most people, that 9-to-5, it's a negative. When they talk about their 9-to-5 job, they're, you know, it's their obligation that they have, and then they come alive once they at 5:05.
Well, you know, you hear it in every like self-help book. You know, self-help books are funny because I often wonder, it's like people say, you need to write a book. I'm like, I don't have time. I'm in the freaking trenches. I'm digging my trench every day, every month, every year to somehow keep moving this forward with the integrity that we're trying that we teach. You know, it's like my father was a military guy. He died in a plane crash when I was 15 years old. So I woke up really young. I had this huge epiphany of just having a fight with him, telling him to go F off, hung up the phone, and he blew up in a plane the next night. Oof. Never, just no closure. 25-year spiritual shamanic journey to go through the release and the pain and the guilt and the anger and the shame and really understanding the inherited karma, dharma, samskara, karma, dharma, samskara factors that we all go through and learn about, I am not going to follow in this repressive Irish Catholic alcoholic history that he came from, because it's in the DNA, just as your family history is in your DNA, and this person has the same poker cards but different genetic makeup. So when we start to pay attention to where we've come from, it helps us hopefully come to a place of compassionate respect for their journey, so that you don't always have to carry these karmic hand-me-downs, and now you use the tools to heal so that you can evolve and become a better version of the history of your family line, and then you bring that into this world. You know, we're no longer bringing chickens to each other. Say, I brought you some eggs, Brian. Thanks. Could you fix my fence?
Right.
You know, we're using money. It's just printed paper. To me, it's just toilet paper with a president's face on it. But it's the tool that's easy and effective and efficient that we use to barter and respect each other's gifts.
And luckily, everyone else wants some of this toilet paper that you have.
Exactly. But again, they're obsessing. The approach in which they go after it is obsessive compulsive, which is bringing them out of the practice. And it's about, where's the consistency of your own self-care related to your reason to why you're on the mat teaching? Hence the whole, you know, you go to Instagram, everybody's half naked doing poses. And I could sit there like John Madden on Sunday football game, marking up, you know, how they mark up the football plays with the X's and the O's and how that play happened. I sit there, and I'm sure you and Chris the same way. You stare at the anatomy of these pictures and you're just, no judgment. I'm not judging people personally, but it's like, come on, that's a herniation waiting to happen in 5 years. You keep doing that pose like that. But look at that great bra you're wearing. You know, it's like, come on. If you, and at least write about the pose from a technical standpoint. And if you show this pose that's very, very advanced, you know, list the stages or show a bunch of other pictures that show the process of getting to that over the course of several years. You know, I just would like to see more responsibility.
There's some friends of ours that are highly skilled acrobats.
Yeah.
And every now and then they'll put out one of their videos on Instagram that shows fall after fall after fall after fall and then getting the trick.
Yeah.
And saying, look, if this didn't happen in isolation.
No.
We spent months getting here.
And that's important for people to see, because when I teach college at the yoga, most of them have maybe three, each class, it's about, there's almost about a little over 700 students a year I've been teaching for over 15 years. So I'm happy for that contribution of just sharing the practice and inspiring to think about self-care, and that the organs inside you are your children. That's always my mantra. These are your kids.
That's good.
Yeah, no, and to get them excited. And when I share what I had to do to not die, they're like, wow. So it's like, life doesn't have to get as bad as it was for me. This is just, I'm this poster boy of sorts to really help bring a different perspective so that when you leave here, you paid $400 for this credit course that helps you graduate, stay with the work. Don't go to a yoga center. And I send them a list of all the yoga centers in the area. Mm. Stay with the practice. Don't stop. Even if it's just once a week, stay connected to your body and let it go. Let people discover themselves.
Well, let's talk about that. How you said you got into yoga because you were health. In the process of dying.
Yeah.
So how did that happen? How did you find yoga?
Well, the actual moment that I found it was when I was, you know, struggling with all this new dietary change because I had the Crohn's and the digestive problems and I could only eat like 10 foods for 3 years. That's all my body would let me do. So I'm like, I'm living in my grandparents' house, and living with them, helping taking care of them. My grandfather had Lou Gehrig's. He was bedridden. He had his own problems there, being paralyzed. And being part of the healthcare team with my grandmother, and we had two rotating nurses, one that lived upstairs and one that would come in the afternoon. So he was 6'6", 300 pounds of dead water weight. So I learned a lot about the colon, hence with my own, ironically, my own struggles with my large intestine and all that challenge. I just observed so much between my grandfather's, the end of his life, the last 10 years of his life with that ailment, Lou Gehrig's, ALS. How I was able to kind of piece together a pathway through being stripped of my ability to eat most foods. And then there was a time where I had the cable was up and I was going to actually cancel it because this is like, this is money I don't need to spend, this cable bill. I'm not really watching TV. I'm cooking half the time and I'm trying to work various jobs that are like 2-3 hour shifts so I could come home, take a nap. I was sleeping 16 hours a day. I was complete chronic fatigue, Epstein-Barr, put a label on it. It's just what it is, jaundice. I mean, it was all this stuff, total endocrine failure. So I had to kind of work in stages and piecemeal job environment so I could make enough money to, because organic food back then was exorbitant. It was expensive. It's not so bad now. If you know how to get in the kitchen, you can keep your costs very, very effective. When people say, oh, it's too expensive to eat well and organic. No, it's not. You can do it. You can really do it. If you have someone show you how to, like, you know, get in the kitchen and don't always buy packaged Amy's organic, you know, enchiladas. I mean, that will add up as opposed to getting a bag of mung beans or a pound of mung beans and you can do khichdi for very simply and very easily. So it was the learning curve to just, I cut the cable bill, but as I did, I stumbled upon some yoga thing on ESPN. It was a TV show.
Really?
Yeah. And I was just like, wow. I mean, obviously, some very beautiful looking women on the beach, but I was just like, the voice was very, very soothing. And then the teacher was very, very calming. And so ESPN had something, I think it was like 7:30, 8:30. There was 3 half-hour little segments with a commercial break. And so I just spent the first year just made myself get up religiously and from 6 to 9, just copy and breathe and just kind of just be in this little moment for myself in the basement watching the show. And
now, were you physically active before that?
Yeah, well, I was varsity basketball in high school.
Okay.
But what I think what led to this downward spiral was a sleigh riding accident at 14. And then growing up with a very, very military father. I mean, it's just, you know, I'm Gemini, so I'm very, now I'm very just in my element, very outgoing, very gregarious. I had to find my authentic way of being because I had a Virgo father who was just, no offense to Virgos out there, but earth signs are very pragmatic, organized. It's their way or the highway. And until you prove a better strategy otherwise, they're telling you what to do. And he was my dad. He was military. So it was a very intense upbringing. And so I, you know, he didn't know what to do with me until he saw that I loved drawing dragons. And then he got me the Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit. And those books became my Bible because those stories, you know, were amazing. And I always, you know, watch the movies and I love Middle Earth.
Okay.
You know, so that was the one way me and my dad bonded. But at 14, the year before he died, I got into an accident sleigh riding. And this was kind of the short circuit to the brainstem. It probably nearly killed me. Luckily, for some grace of God, if I was going a little bit faster down the hill sleigh riding, it could have been worse. So me and my friend Mike, who we just saw each other about a week and a half ago, one of our friend's mothers just passed. So every time we see, we always just bear hug because his sled and I and my sled went down the hill at the same time. His picked up more speed, probably because it was better. He might have had a tube or a toboggan, and I had one of these rickety old things.
With the rails?
Yeah, with the rails. So it didn't have... And that was it. And he just... He traversed across my path, and it just kind of came to a dead stop, just right as I'm coming, like... And I'm... There's just no way to get out of the way. Yeah. He looked up with this face of terror. I tucked my chin. I could still see it happening in the top of my skull. Hit his face. Knocked out his front four teeth. Think of it in terms of an accordion. When an accordion you compress, or the bellows on a harmonium, yeah. the whole energy flow of my whole spine just compressed, and then hit his head, and then I was thrown backward in the air, and I was unconscious for about 10 minutes. And then I had to wear a big soft neck brace, kind of like, you know, things those dogs wear, but not with the big, you know.
The cone?
Not with a cone, but just a huge. It was so funny. And my friends were like, hey, Dan, look over here. I'm like, screw you, because they knew I couldn't turn or jerk my head, because it was a mess. And for almost 11 years, I paid no mind and just thought, oh, I'll shake it off. It's just an injury. But we all know, being, you know, yoga practitioners and hopefully having enough anatomical study under our belt, that the upper cervical spine is curved. It curves, and then the lower, you know, the upper and mid thoracic comes back down, then it curves again, the lower lumbar towards the sacrum. That curve, C1 through C7, became a straight line military neck, and those vertebra distances got very, very tight. And my pelvis on the right side was torqued 14 millimeters up and a little bit forward. Because that's what has to happen. Anything that happens up in the neck, there has to be compensation down below in the pelvis and the lower lumbar. Right. So you don't know this at 14. You're just like, well, this is interesting. And then my left leg's going numb, running up and down the basketball court, you know. So I was dealing, you know, with this. I didn't know what to do for myself, but I would definitely be paying attention to all the different physical deterioration year by year. Something was acting up or getting worse or more aggravated. And so it was just a matter of like, I'm stuck with this. And then you go to a doctor, and then then all these allergies started happening, and then they put you on tetracycline, which you can't get anymore. And that just destroyed all the bacteria. And then that leaves you defenseless.
So the problems you were having, it wasn't like it was all one area of your body. It was all over the place.
It was coming all over the place. And then a year later, the anger of no resolution with my father and then his death. So it was, and you know, when you're 14, you're hitting puberty. You know, you hormonally, you're changing. And so right at the apex of that process at 14 and 15, I was hit with a structural 1-2 shot to the skull and the spine.
Yeah.
And then the emotional trauma of losing my father, surrounded in all of this angst and drama and unresolved anger.
And puberty.
Look at that. A perfect recipe for you're screwed now, mister.
Yeah.
And so my teenage years, man, it was just like, I was just, you know, falling apart. And then a buddy of mine recommended a chiropractor around age 20 in college, because I was miserable. I was just always tired, state of lethargy, absorption issues, constant flares between the Crohn's. I didn't know it was Crohn's or colitis, is the ulcers. Everything was just a mess, chronic pain. And it was just holding on to all this trauma and the memory and the pain and the, you know, the physical, you know, shot of the sleigh riding. And then obviously all that stress that I felt I was under at 5, when my father, who was just this very strict military dad, he's like, but Dad, no, shut up, son, just do it this way. Like, but Dad, no, your voice was constantly stifled, you know, and kids want to express. And I think the new parenting wave that's happening with homeschooling, right, and all the things that we're learning about ourselves that we want to improve upon, is to not repeat that over-stifling of a child's independent voice, because children know who they are. That's why I work with kids. That's why I work well with kids. You know, underserved kids, foster kids, autistic kids. Doesn't matter. 25 years of doing that, because I'm just happy and a big goofball because I'm alive. Only to die again. But that's okay, because now I got the tools. So it's, you know, I'm just trying to enjoy the process, which is what the whole yoga teachings tell us. We're all on a journey to die. So let's have fun and be responsible, but keep ourselves healthy and use the natural law tools that are available to us to thrive while we leave our imprint.
So how did you make the transition from ESPN yoga to something, to a studio? I
felt like I was just at a point where, like, okay, I got enough, and I just need to find a teacher just so I can kind of see, you know, can you see how's my technique, you know, how have I been doing for the past year, just kind of absorbing and using my intuition.
So someone to help you refine your practice.
Yeah, yeah. And that was the teachers over at Starseed, which were Jason Martin and Jyoti Crystal. And it was a Ashtanga, Iyengar, and shamanism school. So it really had this nice kind of trinity of deep, deep emotional work tied to like what Ashtanga. So Ashtanga was my first practice, A, because it was as a Gemini and I'm all over the place. My root chakra is like ripped out. My digestive system is, you know, scattered. You know, so you're trying to, Ashtanga, the best part about that, because it's like, you know, where Vinyasa was also evolved and birthed from, is the order. It's the discipline. This sure. is what you do every day, and you don't go beyond that sequence until you get that one pretty well under your belt. And that, I think, for some personality types, works very, very well at first, because you're looking to get your body better circulated so this seven chakra relationship can start to integrate. So people who are scattered, and then you know, there's a lot to be said for astrology and Vedic astrology and your dosha and all that stuff tied to your brain rhythm. Like, I'm air, you know. I do better now that I've balanced and I'm healthy and I have no more problems digestively. Everything is great, knock on wood. But my practice, because my mind is a very busy Gemini mind, I'm running Vinyasa 24/7. You know, an earth sign, it's a little bit more steady and slow. Right. You know, I get up 6:03, I'm wide awake and alert. Here we go. So like Anusara, long, obnoxious yin, Iyengar holds muscular energy. Did Qi Kung is great, like hard Qi Kung. You just stay in these and you just squeeze every muscle. For me, that I'd say 60% of my practice is rooted in long, obnoxious holds, because I know on a body-mind level from my dosha and my astrology, that is perfect for me to kind of rodeo in the speed of the mind, given my predisposition. I would also, you know, when I work with other people, I always just find out, you know, what's going on in the digestive system, what their birthday, astrology. And, you know, some people who aren't morning people, who are slow risers, typically need Vinyasa or something a little bit more moving. I do Vinyasa maybe two, three times a month.
Okay.
And I get up at like 4 o'clock, maybe five times a month.
So you, the Ashtanga that you started off with, that regimented discipline that goes along with it.
Saved my life.
I mean, do you feel like there might have been any connection to that with the things with your father that were not tied together? Or is it just your personality?
That's a great question, because I've, you know, I think every year that I'm away from that moment of trauma, it's what now? It's like over 30 years it happened. So it's like every year you just feel much more at peace with it. And my apartment fire 2 years ago was a great level of healing, because he was a fireman too. You know, he did a lot with like negotiating missile guidance systems for Singer Kirfot. He loved planes. We were surrounded by the pictures of the B-1 bomber. He was a Navy guy. He used to land planes on aircraft carriers. Wow. So he came, really interesting, as I learned more about him after his death, obviously, than what I thought I knew or understood about him while he was alive. So, you know, it was an interesting journey for me, yogically, spiritually, karmically, to come full circle over the last 30 years. But the beautiful part of when I was gutting my apartment after the fire happened, you know, you're cleaning up what's left. I found the rope that I put under the dresser that he always taught us, that God forbid, if you get trapped in your bedroom or any room, have a good rope tied to the base of your dresser. So if you're trapped, you just go up, knock the window out, throw that rope down, and just climb down the best you can the side of the building.
Really?
Yeah.
So you had a rope in there.
I had a rope for 12 years, and it brought back like tears, but good memories, and just laughing like, my God, this is what my father taught me to do. And here it is 12 years later. I forgot, you know, and I probably would have remembered if something ever happened, but I was at the Lehigh Valley Yoga Festival the night of the fire 2 years ago.
Really?
Teaching, and Sean Johnson was doing kirtan. I was doing my kirtan, and I didn't get the call that the building burnt down till like 11 o'clock at night when everything was done and I'm on my way home. So it was interesting that I joke and I tell spiritually, kind of God came in and evicted everybody from the building and left me just with what I need to just try to operate and figure out a way to rebuild and restructure how I'm doing it, why I'm doing it, and get more clear mm-hmm. on the relationship to, you know, just staying in the heart and trusting that I'm kicking your ass really hard right now, but I still love you and I need you to trust that. So pick your pants up and go do what you're here to do. It was just an interesting conversation over the last 2 years that has obviously brought us here now at this table. to explore. So your question, to get back to it, is I think the Ashtanga, I feel grateful now, because if it wasn't for that military discipline upbringing, I don't know if I could run what I'm doing. I don't think I would have been able to adapt and be able to market and run a one-man yoga business and sound and music and all these services that I do. You know, I've been surrounded by earth signs my whole life. My dad was a Virgo. My mom's a Taurus. My sister's a Taurus. And my brother's Pisces. So he's grounded, but he also is very creative. And, you know, he's his own man. And I love my family. Now I can say that, you know, as we've all gone through this journey over these many years, the yoga process is coming back full circle to truly see and honor and love everyone in your family. Because if you can say that, then you've done it. Yeah. You know, I believe, you know, when you really come to a great place of just total love and acceptance and admiration of your immediate family, that's a huge karmic growth spark.
Yeah, I never thought about that, but you're right, because the family, although we all have such similar stories,
yeah,
your family is so different, so diverse, and there are so many that challenge you.
And they're there to push your karma. Yeah. Because that annoying finger that just keeps sticking in the same little wound.
Yeah, they know your spots.
Oh, yes, and it's beautiful. So, yeah, I think I'm grateful for the discipline, even though I didn't realize it at the time, because I was like the air sign that just wanted to fly around in a plane up in the air. But the pragmaticism of an earth personality, Virgo, Taurus, Capricorn, is like, hey, there's a runway here. You got to land that plane sometime. Yeah. You got to refuel, you know? Mm-hmm. So I look at the whole astrology relationships too, because it's really not that we're stereotyped or I'm definitively this or definitively that, but it is probably one of the more helpful, insightful tools to just self-reflect, so that when you're having a hard time or you feel stuck, sometimes the yoga practice doesn't cut it. Maybe you need to just go sit and meditate or read something that's really esoteric. So it just brings you closer to some unseen force in the universe. Call it God, consciousness, the divine order. I don't tell people what to believe, because that's your own sacred relationship to your own, hopefully making sense of why you're here. You know, that's the problem we have as a society and a world culture. Everybody's trying to enforce their will where it's not needed. Oh, this person is Muslim. This is a Christian. This person loves the Buddhist teachings. You know, okay, great. So who are you? Like, you know, what's going on? What's new? You know, and I just like, what's coming out of that heart? You know, are you a good person?
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's the long-term gift of staying committed to yourself and putting your health first. So that you can be a good teacher, so that, you know, you can see your ego and reel it in and rodeo it in when it gets a little wild. Because there's nothing to prove. We're all going to die. You know, we don't have time for yoga divas and chant divas. I see it all. No judgment. It's just people are working through the various stages of trying to find authentic self-worth. And that's the constant theme, which is why we do this, because we know we can be better. We know there's a better version year that can keep evolving. We can keep evolving into.
Yeah, and I think yes, definitely true. There also needs to be a little bit of a self-awareness. You know, you can't just expect the change to happen and the evolution to occur.
No.
There has to be focused attention.
But that's why, hopefully, you know, the social media thing is the inherent potential struggle we're dealing with, because there is such an epidemic of challenged self-esteem issues collectively, consciously. It's a collective conscious self-esteem trigger party we're all in, you know, right? We agree on that. But without judging it, it's what I always tell my students. Look, you have judgment, observation, discernment, and then what's the other one? I'm having a brain fart here. Judgment, discernment, observation. I can't. I'm blowing it. But if I think of it, I'll come back to it. But within those three major things of judging, discerning, observing, and there's gray area. You know, we don't have to make it personal. It's just an assessment. Assessment, discernment, observation, detachment. In all of that, there's some wiggle room there. And I think it gets confused and it becomes problematic when we sit there or get triggered. Like when I lovingly complain about some of the things on Instagram, I'm not trying to be a jerk. I'm just trying to say, like, I was raised in a military, your word is your honor, integrity. And if you're not following the rules, or at least explaining the methodology in a way that's inspiring and fun, because our job as teachers is what? To keep people safe.
Yes.
First, that bottom line.
Yeah.
Safety first.
Yeah.
Stop, drop, and roll. You know, safety, 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 safety. And to inspire people to say, hey, look, man, you're pushing. Homie, don't play that. You don't have that pose. Touch your shin. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody gets an A in my class. You don't get graded on poses. You know, it's just let the pose grant itself to you. Don't go get the pose. Negotiate, breathe, explore, but know when you're bullshitting. And that's really the negotiation of any one of us when we're working with our body in any of these modalities, in any style of yoga and Tai Chi and or whatever you're called to do based on what your needs are, your emotional needs, your physical needs. You know, if you're not absorbing, you got to do a lot of midsection work. You got to fire up that core. You got to really open up the hips, the vagus nerve, all that stuff, you know. We're seeing now the science, thank God, because I've been talking about the vagus nerve forever. And now we're definitively seeing how, like, you know, hormones that are coming down through the bloodstream, you know, if you're out of balance in your bacteria, they're Pac-Maning that stuff. They're like, waka, 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 waka. They're eating hormones before they get to, like, the rest of the body.
Yeah.
You know, so that's hence the energy dips, all these hormonal imbalances. There's this beautiful, you know, solar system of life living in us. And so as we get more clear and nurture that relationship, then we become healthier. And then, you know, world changes. We don't pollute so much. We're polluted. That's why the earth's polluted, because we're polluted.
Yeah.
We clean up, then the earth gets better. More of us become more clean and clear and commit to some kind of balance. I think you see people look at the planet with more love and realize, like, this is our home. We got to really take care of it.
That's true. There is the self-awareness and the awareness environment is very closely connected.
Yeah. It's like what we see on the outside is a direct reflection, a mirror. It's like, you're my mirror. Baby, looking back at me. Having a Justin Timberlake moment. That's a very spiritual song, right? Very spiritual.
So, I thought so.
I knew it. You knew when you felt it. I was like, okay, cool. That's a great kind of lyrical subject to put into a pop song. I was actually, you know, I'm not a big fan, but I heard it. I was like, yeah, that's a cool thing to be saying. Cool thing to be kind of, you know, talking about lyrically.
All right. So you go back to the origins of your yoga. So you went to these teachers, the Iyengar, Ashtanga,
and the shamanism.
And was it there that you started to do some internal healing?
Yeah, big time. Especially physiologically, because that was the first way in, right? You got to go through the koshas, the physical, the physical layer, emotional layer, energy, spiritual. So you got to go like, almost, they call it retracing. Like, you go back in time, like you go backwards through a time machine. So you have to kind of purge and cleanse and detox through all the buildup of the stuff that's, you know, your body is holding, whether it be emotional patterns, just toxic residue of antibiotics that are still hanging out in your liver. That's what's so great about your liver. The liver and the lungs, I think, are the only two organs that can actually regenerate themselves. They can self-heal.
Thank God.
I know the liver is, and I'm pretty sure the lungs can. But that's what's so cool. That if we can really embrace that understanding and then just make the changes, you know, things can repair. And I'm kind of living proof, you know, for what I went through. But yeah, I've noticed that was the start, that like between that practice and then this amazing Shaolin monk, like a real deal Shaolin Kung Fu and Qi Kung. He's got a temple in New York City called USA Shaolin Temple, Si Fu Xin Yang Ning. He was in a documentary on the Discovery Channel. This guy's chi is like, it's off the charts, man. It's great. And so I think he's franchised his USA Shaolin Temple school. So a few of his really committed students evolved and become very, very adept at the practice and opened up their own USA Shaolin Temples, you know, throughout the United States and the world. So he was somebody who was very, very influential in my healing path. Just again, muscular energy. You know, I would build it up with the yoga and the Qi Kung, and then I've, you know, like a ship with a leaking hull, you get it up, and then, okay, after a couple of days, pff, like a deflating balloon. So at least I got a glimpse of this potential. I was like, wow, I can feel this coursing through my veins, you know, and so that was just a very simple cause and effect. That's all I needed to just then, okay, get into the kitchen. Let's go organic. Let's just go total natural food prep. And then just keep this up and slow down, you know, and find little part-time jobs. This is before I was teaching, to just find the balance so that I can get into the rhythm of what I joke about in my TED talk. Calm, type A personality. Because that's in it. That whatever that passion and drive and that knowing in your soul is like what you are here to do. Then developing the right relationship and the pacing to be able to do it consistently and healthily, quote unquote, healthily throughout your lifetime.
So diet played a role in your recovery.
Food is everything.
Okay, so not just a small role.
No, big. I'd say 50-60% is the purity of the food and your ability to absorb it. You know, you are what you eat, but you are what you absorb. And so if you're not absorbing in the pancreas and the spleen and the stomach and all that whole digestive cycle is challenged, you're just not getting the full nutritional benefit. And then if you've got like parasites or some kind of imbalance with yeast, a lot of people have like a yeast imbalance. You have yeast in you. When it gets out of hand, it becomes like a prisoner's breaking free. It's like a riot. And then they just go and they eat sugar and bread and beer and wine and anything fermented. And then all of a sudden, you know, a couple of years in, you're just constantly bloated after everything you eat. You eat a sandwich or any kind of bread product. You get foggy and you need a nap. You have a white tongue all the time. You can look at your tongue and the color of your skin. There's all these different indicators, you know, on the body that show you that there's probably just some, you know, imbalance going on with your yeast and your candida within your bacteria relationship. And it's just something that's now becoming more common conversation because a lot of people, you know, we're a sugar society. We've grown up on some sugar and antibiotics. And so one round of drugs can just completely nuke. It's like a nuclear bomb to the whole terrain. So yeah. That's what's a big part of the education, to just realize those relationships so that we can, yeah, make the proper healthier food choices that can support our little critters in here and feed them and love them, and then also feel the energy that we haven't been absorbing nutritionally.
And do you feel that part of the recovery physically was also driven by the asana practice?
Yeah, well, that was the thing that was lighting the fire under my ass. You know, it's just like you feel the blood coursing, circulation, because it was, like I said, it's like a bicycle, right? A business is like typically a bicycle hole with the spokes. You have all these different things that hold the wheel together. Mm-hmm. Your body's the same way. You have the center, which essentially, I'm going to say the stomach is now being called, it's the real brain, because everything is fed through the brain, you know, and so it's like everything is being processed and absorbed and then is then being distributed to the rest of the tissues and the organs and the glands. So that's the center of the bicycle wheel, as far as I'm concerned, at least the way I see it. And then every other, you know, organ and gland, the brain is all part of this process. And what's interesting to note too is that the practice, again, yeah, it was just the alertness, you know, the alertness that you get. Mental alertness, and then the blood going into the core, and then noticing that, wow, I just had a piece of raw broccoli and I didn't fart. Wow, that was like little victory, right? It's like, and I'm the guy now at like big events or like wedding receptions and cocktail hours, and they got that table with all like the peppers and the broccoli and the cauliflower and the celery and the carrot and the dip. I eat like half and I just hang out there and just scoff that because I love it and it doesn't bother me anymore because I went 7 years 100% raw, juicing wheatgrass, sprouting. I went to Hippocrates. That place was the finishing touch on getting the enzymes and the high oxygenated food to help do the repair of the tissue that was damaged because of the years of dealing with all that stuff. And then obviously with the yoga, that just, again, that just fires up the blood, helps with the efficiency of all this communication and rebuilding. So to me, I just feel like a, you know, Humpty Dumpty, man. It's a Humpty Dumpty endocrine journey and it's all beautiful. And I'm, you know, I'm goofy and happy because I just keep trying to use the tools.
When you went to Hippocrates to go and make that final step towards the cleaning, obviously at that point, healing the guts was a priority of yours. As you were going through this process, was it your primary focus or was it just a happy side effect?
No, I really knew that, like, I feel that my practice was really, really strong. And I felt for the most part that my energy levels were the best they had ever been since I can remember, since I was a teenager, since, you know, but I just felt something was missing as far as the consistency and the sustained release of it. And I knew, and I was eating great. It was mostly cooked. It was, you know, soups and eating really great organic food, nothing packaged, nothing processed. And my cells looked great. They did blood cell analysis. They were like moving like little bumper cars. You know, if you ever did cell analysis, your blood cells should be like little bumper cars moving around like, hey, Jane, hey, Mary, hey, Bob, how's Susan, how you doing today? And when the blood cells are moving really slow under a microscope and sluggish, there's a lot of toxicity. At least that's the philosophy there. And so it's interesting. Healthy blood cells are just like alive and vibrating and pulsating like, hey, blah, blah, blah. And it was like, and so I had a good, you know, blood workup, but just something just didn't know how to put it into words. And so I went to Whole Foods and I opened up one of those massage magazines and opened right up to Hippocrates in West Palm Beach with Brian and Anna Clement, who learned under Ann Wigmore and that whole raw food movement. And I just knew my whole body was like, ding, 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 jackpot, jackpot, jackpot. I got the jackpot. It's just like, wow. And I'm like, okay. Then I researched, went to the website, and then I look at the price. I'm like, oh, yeah. You know, it's just like, okay, how am I going to do this? And I just called and I just told them what I'm doing, where I'm at, who I am, what I'm doing. And I was able to get a little bit of a discount and barter some of my music yoga services, mm-hmm. you know, but that was then, you know, that was a long time ago, but it was just the intention that they really, I don't know, maybe they just liked me and they just saw that, like, I'm willing to do everything. And I said, like, and I'll talk because then I'll celebrate and I'll tell everyone about you. Not that I needed to sell them on my marketing skills, but like, that's why I have sponsors now and there's more coming down the pipe. It's because, like, if I believe in you, I want to share it with other people about what you're doing because I think it's great and more people need to know. You know, and that's the whole thing of community. You know, when you have tribal relationships and you really see that, like, if I help you, it helps me, it helps them, it helps everybody. There's no competition. There's no 2-time Grammy nominated yoga professor who cured Crohn's out there. I'm the only guy. Just like your wife, Chris, is really top of the game with the acro yoga thing. Mm-hmm. Everybody brings their own special thing to that, this, that, and the other thing. So why are we competing? Why can't we help and celebrate each other?
Yeah. You know? I keep coming back again and again. Everyone that I talk to here, was they talk about, you know, the
Jesus. They keep talking about Jesus. Right? I love
exactly,
Jesus.
Yes, that's,
I do.
That's where I was going.
Exactly
right in my mind. No, it's when the success, when they have found success, when things really started to fall into place, they found a niche.
Yeah,
something that was really special and that they were good at, that they were passionate about, and that wasn't really well traveled by a lot of the people.
Yeah,
they focused on it,
and that's what evolved with the integration of sound and vibration and shamanism and yoga. Be able to like teach this very, very anally retentive, technically alignment class, and then have the longest shavasana known to humankind, 10 different instruments, bringing you into a deep theta, delta, gamma state of consciousness, DMT, all this stuff that's just recharging and really opening you up to these spiritual potentialities that you do sense and feel, but because we're so busy in the matrix and the rat race of everything that we do, the hamster wheel, call it what you want, but it's having the experience to then go explore this rhythm and then bring what you feel and learn and nurture back into the matrix so that mm-hmm. you can have a better relationship with how you're functioning out there.
All right, so I do want to follow up on that, but before I go any further, I wanted to ask, are you still a raw foodie?
I'd say 60%.
Okay.
Now I can eat anything I want, and I don't live in fear of food, mm-hmm. but I eat good food. I'm not going to go. I was joking to somebody. So I was like, well, you wouldn't date anybody who eats fast food. I'm like, no, it's nothing personal. You go right to the friend box. You might be a great person, but if we were to date, it's not going to happen. I go, I want to go make some kale and lentil soup, and you want to go get a burger? Good for you. That's where your awareness is at. No judgment. I love you. You are now my friend, but we could never get married because mm-hmm. I don't want to live like that.
Right.
And it's not about me being arrogant or me being, I'm better. No, this is my journey. This is what I know. I'm not going to push my beliefs on you, but if this is what makes you feel good about your life right now, awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, my great aunt just passed away. She was 96 and she, you know, she wasn't a yogi. She was dancing foxtrot merengue and fixing plumbing pipes and she could still drive. You know, she just had a spirit about her. And some people may be able to process that food energetically for whatever the reason. I don't believe in anything as a be all absolute in any area of this exploration that we're doing here. I just know that there are genetics and different emotional experiences and attitude and spirit and things that play a part. It's very complicated. So there's no one size fits all. There's no one general formula that will cure this person versus this person. I see it as finding the right order of colors on the painter's palette you need to apply in the right sequence for person A, for person B, for person C, for person D. Because it's a very unique approach and you have to kind of, you know, trial and error how you're going to work with the emotional component versus the physical component versus the nutritional component. And sometimes you have to work on the emotional component to get the body relaxed to absorb better, or someone just has some low back problems, so you can just start with the structural stuff. You know, you just assess and you have to kind of be able to be intuitive and innovative in that moment on a case by case basis. At least that's what I've seen over, you know, for 25 years, just on my own, doing the own assessment and holding myself accountable to all the things that I see and then looking at myself and like, wow, okay, well, this holds up here. This holds up for me. It doesn't hold up for Zeus and my client in Massachusetts or whatever. You learn to just, you have to be flexible. Mm-hmm. For all this. I mean, you have a lot of knowledge. We all do. But wielding it takes experience. And you got to really just be committed to your own practice and then just get out there and teach. Teach for the love of teaching, sharing, and then you'll get better. You'll get better. It's in the books, but you can only regurgitate and memorize things so much. You got to get out there and do it, you know, and experience it and see it in action to really then come back to the written material and say, oh, that's what that Swami meant. Oh, that's what that anatomy teacher meant. You know, mm-hmm. It's that integration, and it takes time.
Okay.
And unfortunately, you know, you can't rush it.
All right, so let's go back. You did a real brief description of what one of your yoga classes is like, and it sort of piqued my interest.
Yeah.
Would you go in a little more detail? If I came into one of your yoga classes today, what would I experience?
Well, I would be completely naked, sitting on a nice little... I'm kidding.
Where do I sign up?
Because you're a hot dude. No, I mean, I'm a very conversational yoga teacher. Maybe that's something that some people like or don't. I do crack jokes. It's a very Swami Satchitananda meets Robin Williams meets Paul Grilley, because I like his anatomy approach.
Okay.
And, you know, but there's jokes and humor and laughter is such a beautiful pranayamic experience. And so when you can blend that all in and then obviously take people on this Pink Floyd samadhi journey with vibration, I don't know, I've just kind of evolved and perfected this kind of series of this type of workshop experience or class experience that, you know, starts you with some really, really intelligent warming up so that you can kind of feel, you know, these basic areas of the body, still fundamental poses. And then we build the heat in a very ladder-like way to this intensity level. And then obviously you throw some challenging stuff in there because there's always different level students. So it's always an intuitive decision where we're going to go. I don't sit there and write out a whole plan. I don't do that anymore. It's very, you just know the plan. And you can see, once you see everybody in downward dog, you know exactly where you need to take the class. That just comes from years of teaching, you know, and then just seeing the body, and seeing your own body. So within that, it just kind of opens up limitless potential, because then if I see more than three people in a class still working with basic warrior one alignment in the back leg, I'm like, I stop the presses, and then we go to the wall and we do these brick stuff, and then we do strap, and just like, okay, and for the benefit of all, to refresh and retrain, because you're never done reinforcing level one foundational methodology, because as you get good and as you think you get good or more advanced, that's the stuff that you really have to keep a good relationship with, because poses get gypped, they start to suffer, and if you aren't consistent with your own practice and having someone who's experienced too, just lovingly call you out on what they're seeing, having an objective eye on your body, even though you have a great sense of your own body and your own practice, we're never done. You're never done with a level, right, beginner's mind, that whole idea, just staying open and humble to just keep refining. Like this fire, this is the greatest teaching. You know, you're under adrenal stress or kidney fatigue. Your low back gets really tight. Your hips get really, really tight. Those two muscle areas are the first areas that start to just get like clogged. And so here I am trying to be spiritual about my fire. And so my yoga practice, it didn't go to shit. It just had to stop for the first couple months. And it became a CrossFit training exercise going up and down stairs with hundreds of boxes, because there was no elevator. The building was burnt out. And it literally was a month of moving things up and down stairs, boxes, salvaging, chopping down my dressers, chopping down the couches and bringing them down this narrow three-flight stairwell to the curb for the garbage. And I did all this because this was like the purging. This was finish the job. God said, I need you out, burn you down. Now clean this up, keep what's ever keepable, and streamline. And so that physical activity, pranayama the whole time, ujjayi breath, up and down those stairs, hundreds of times, every day. I had three used cars die within 6 months. The one I had, the minivan, 3 days into the salvage, it died. I was moving it to my friend's garage. It just died. And so I had to get another car the next day. So I'm scrambling. People are donating money to help me, and I had to go get another minivan. And then that lasted 30 days. I got everything out of the burnt-out apartment, got it to my friend's garage, and then that van died. I mean, you can't like write this in a book. I'm not making this up. And I'm sitting there like, what the F is going on here? And still it all comes back. I trust. This is what you want. You son of a, I have a bone to pick with you next lifetime. And I'm breathing and I'm doing my prana and I'm juicing. I'm doing 10 ounces of wheatgrass juice a day. Whew. raw food. I'm like, okay, I will not buckle. And then I rent a car in the second month and I park it at a festival and it gets hit. Okay. The guy was great. It was awesome. Karmically good guy. And he took ownership and he paid for the repair. It was a quarter panel thing. So that was good. So I settled that with Enterprise, rent a car. And then I finally, now the minivan that I've had for about a year and a half, it's knock on wood. Awesome. It finally led to this nice Chevy Uplander. And it's just, okay, I probably always drive a minivan or a van. There's just no other car for me.
Why?
Just because of the space and the freedom, especially now being this mobilepreneur, creating an evolution of my business model where my services have always been mobile. And like I told you earlier, before we started the interview, I was only in the apartment 2 to 3 days a week anyway. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, so how do I call upon all the wonderful friends, all the wonderful relationships, 200 plus yoga centers that I've been in? You know, how do I pool all this love and respect and tribe and say, like, I'm really trying to reinvent this in a mobile way? You know, and everybody's, yeah, come. It's nice to have, like we said, FaceTime with friends. And it's just, it's really becoming this deeply joyful human tribal experience, which really is what yoga is trying to teach us.
So before we talk about what your business life looks like right now, which I do want to address, let's first explain all the different facets of your business
life. Oh, boy.
Yeah. Well, and how it is right now.
Well, right now, I am the top most flexible Chippendales dancer in the New York nightlife scene in the clubs. Oh,
so.
Baby.
You've got this walk.
Yeah, right? I got this thing. Swagger. No, man. It's, you know, what I've learned, given my personal adversity and journey of self-repair, it gave me a different vantage point on which to see the body for whatever the reason, for whatever the karma. And so when I teach or when I present, and then all these instruments that I play, you know, at 19, I was playing flute for kids with AIDS who were dying, you know, in the hospital. So I've always had a lot of empathy. And I think that came from losing my dad and just being able to empathize with, you know, 1 year, that year when the World Trade Center went up in 2001. Yeah. Wow. I had to stop. About 2 years later, there was a whole bunch of students that came through my yoga course at the college who had lost a parent. And so it was a really powerful year of just connecting. You know, we created a small little group together and just talked because they related to me having lost a parent so young. So it was one of those profound moments of humanness that just help in the grieving process because it was so fresh and so new for them. And just talking about the phases of healing and phases of grief and allowing yourself to grieve, because a lot of times we don't. We just repress and we bury and run. We don't feel. We have to feel everything. Happiness, sadness, joy, guilt, shame, jealousy. It's all part of this body's way of trying to release a negative thing and even a positive thing so that we can get a better perspective on how to live and more in balance. And when you feel jealous or angry, just deal with it in a more healthy way. Mm-hmm. And then see where it's coming from, because it's your stuff. It's always your stuff. You know, whatever triggers you, you know, can heal you. So, yeah. But back to that, I made a list, you know, and I encourage anyone who gets to listen to this conversation, if you're thinking about wanting to be a full-time teacher or figure out how to do it, you gotta be patient. You gotta make sure that you're doing things, have a practice, eat good alkaline foods, because that helps kind of keep your nervous system very, very calm. And then from there, just make a list of all the things you know how to do. And then start drawing lines and see if anything could be kind of matched. And then make a second list of what the matched things look like. Hmm. And then it's like almost like a combo platter. So I did an exercise which is hard for a Gemini because it's all in my mind like a Rolodex and it's just spinning. So this was a very Virgo earth sign thing to do. Make a list, a to-do list. Greatest invention ever.
Look at you evolving.
I mean, I tell you, the to-do list at 30 years of age saved my life. When I did, I first did my real serious to-do list to organize my shit. And I was like, wow, why have I avoided this all my life? All my life, I have avoided doing this kind of just, it's a contract. A to-do list is a literal, visible contract. Mm. And so that really helped me a lot because I struggled with that for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And I can't even use like Google Calendar. That's too much. I still have a day planner. I have a day planner that I can write in. you got to do what works for your mind, you know, and don't make excuses. Just try to find the best ways to help yourself stay organized and track what you have to track with your business.
Especially with what we do.
Yeah.
So many pieces.
Yeah, there's so many pieces. And I'm doing so many different things. And I'm excited because now I'm bringing in this incredible fellow Gemini corporate sales marketing person who left the corporate world and just loves everything that I'm doing, gets it. Her birthday's 2 days after mine. And I'm like, aha, aha, help is coming to me. Finally, finally, I have help coming to me. And it's just amazing. Okay, this person I know can hopefully sell this better than I sell it. Mm-hmm. And then I can free up more time to then now expand other areas that, you know, I've been doing fine as a one-man show, but bringing her into the fold is really going to help intelligently focus on these other services. Like when I do a college gig or I do a concert, or if I expand off the TED Talk, because people have seen that now and people want me to come talk, you know, those services have different fee structures. So when you learn that you're not just teaching a workshop or you're not just doing that, you know, when I do a motivational talk, it has a lot of passion because like I can get like really animated and fun and throw jokes because like I was lying on the floor shoving wheatgrass juice in an enema bag up my asshole to not die. And I'm fine putting that in, you know, on the recording. I don't care. I mean, it's just insane what I had to do to stay alive. And so when I can get that real in the moment with a group of people, they're just like, oh my God. But it's awesome because I do it and I self-efface and I just use jokes because I still can't believe it myself looking back on the insanity of this journey. But I'm grateful because if one thing that I say, the way that I say things, get someone excited, or even if they cry, a lot of people cry and they talk to me like, well, cool, come here, bear hug. Let's just do it now. You, hopefully whatever I said, just now go use this. Go use what we shared. Now go do it. Because that's the one thing. You can't give anybody discipline. You can't give anybody that thing. That's got, you got to pull that up. I mean, when I was really depressed and sick with all that I was dealing with at 19, I was just looping Tony Robbins, those CDs that when he first started, that the collection of CDs. I mean, were they working? I don't know. I mean, I couldn't eat. I was sleeping. I was dealing with all these, you know, emotional ups and downs, but I would just, you know, try to loop his teachings and just like, and I remember like I'm in the basement. I'm like, I can do it, Tony. I know I can. Like just crying, like I'm holding on, I'm not giving up, and I wanted to die. But you know, having that it'd still be fun if we could like go back and film it. But I have those memories of just what I needed to do that day, that week, that month to just keep myself and keep my mind in the game of like focus. Go make your broccoli soup. Go make your, you know, all the different things because it just was hard.
Sure.
But that's what I did. I made a list of all the things that evolved. And then I took 4 years off from music. I retired. I said, okay, until I get well. Anyone who's an artist, especially with music or acting or dancing or singing, you know, there's ego there and there's a tad bit of narcissism. You got to get clear on like, where's that coming from? Like, what are you trying to prove? The roar of the crowd? Are you addicted to the applause? You want to be God complex? You want to be the next Justin Bieber? You know, whatever. And the music industry is, I don't even want to get into that conversation, how I feel about where it's gone.
Not that different from the yoga teaching where they have that same God complex. That
Yeah. And you see these patterns of ego. And so the best thing I did was leave music. And it was painful. It was like, because, you know, when you think that you do this and this is what validates you, no, you gotta go through this shift of consciousness to find out, no, this complements me. These are gifts that complement me. I don't play music to validate me. I don't need people to like me anymore. I'm glad I'm alive. And the 4 years off of really being willing to let go of music so I could become more yogic and heal myself was the inner, was the finer, was that final soul negotiation I had to go through so that when music did come back, it was complete joy, it was complete love. And that's when that album got onto the Grammy ballot and got nominated.
Now, when you took the 4 years off of music, was it just performing publicly or
everything?
Entirely.
Everything.
I didn't write, did nothing,
didn't even touch guitar. Because to me, I was struggling with, you know, for a while when I was younger, the need to play music was part of the ego-based pushing that I needed to keep doing so I could do the next thing that I needed to repair myself. But then once I got to a place that I was healthier, then I realized, okay, this pushing over here with these egocentric practices weren't doing it. Mm-hmm. It was actually making it worse. It was then starting to create exhaustion. Mm-hmm. And so like when I tell people when they chant and sing, it's like a lot of times when you're singing on stage, you're chanting, so many people are caught in this whole thing. This is me, and I am singing outward to you. No. If you can learn to shift that relationship vibrationally so that when you chant or sing, that you're breathing and then you're singing and vibrating the tone elliptically in an orbit through your seven chakras. And then, like a sun, the sound is expanding out of you, outward, but in an elliptical round type of thing. So it's not just going one way out of you, which depletes you. So my voice, I can sing for 3 hours and never get hoarse.
What's the relationship you have with the audience in that case?
And that's where the joy is, because then this is how we're talking. I crack jokes. I invite people up to play. What we did here at the festival a couple of weeks ago was beautiful. It was 3 hours, had a light show, set up all my instruments, loop stations, and I had two stations for people to come up and sit and play drums. And we had this beautiful moment during Aung San Wahe Guru, which is a Kundalini chant. We had all these like young kids from like 7 to 14 years old up in the rafters of the barn, all going, ah, and I'm going, Wahe Guru. And then they're singing, ah. And it was for like 10 minutes. It was just this wonderful, the adults were singing, the angel, the kids, the angels up there were singing, and everybody was just happy because we saw like, this is the next generation. And look at the fearlessness. Look at the openness that we're born with. Look at the strength of knowing how good we feel about ourselves that we were born with. And then obviously shit happens and we get, you know, compromised. Yeah. And then we're on this path to try to find the happy four-year-old again without crapping our diaper. That'll be the book. How to be a happy four-year-old at 40 without crapping your pants. Don't crap your pants, kids. Please don't do it. But I was great. I was at the Yoga Journal conference recently, and there, that was a wonderful time, and I really connected with some great people, really great people in the organization. I had nothing but nice conversations there. And I was really happy because in the main room where they had all their sponsors and the vendors table set up, Depends Undergarments was there, and they have like a special new, I'm not here to promote them. I was happy because I have a very special relationship with Depends Undergarments because we went through like 10, 12 packages a month changing my grandfather for 6 years that I lived with them. So if I had any financial astuteness back then, I should have bought stock in Depends. But they have like a new kind of yoga comfy underwear that, like, God forbid, if something happens in class, you know, you're covered, you know. Yeah. Or if you wanted to drive a long distance and not take a break, you crap yourself and keep going. I mean, if that's your thing, like that woman in Texas, right? Yeah. That astronaut, that woman astronaut who wanted to be with the astronaut who she was having an affair with, but he wouldn't leave his wife. And so he dumped her and she lost her mind and tried to go across Texas. She wore a space diaper, crapped her pants to make good time, try to kill her.
Yes, it was amazing.
But, you know, we read these things in the news and then after the shock value wears off, you're like, man, yogically and hormonally, it's like, what is not connected? Like, what is not communicating? What is this person eating? How often are they dumping? And I'm all about shitting. I mean, obviously it would make sense. I have a 50-page colon PowerPoint that I used to do at ECA Fitness and WSSC. I had done the fitness conference thing for a while, many years back and forth between New York and Miami. And those are good gigs. So it's like learning how to, present, you know, if you got that personality for that, because not everybody does. So if it doesn't feel right, don't do it. You know, don't force something that you're not ready to do. Start with teaching classes. You know, we were talking outside that, like, I started in gyms because it was flat rate. Mm-hmm. And then you can then sub, and then you can figure out if you really want to do it.
And the great thing about flat rate in gyms is that if no one shows up, you still get paid.
Absolutely. So you can at least then kind of figure out, and it gives you that hour and a half that nobody showed up. Then you can hopefully, if you're smart and resourceful, you can get online and just keep trying new things and just... Yeah. You know, and I work with kids, so, and I play all these instruments, so I did drumming circles. I started a business called the Drumming Circle Dude, and I went out and did birthday parties for families, for kids.
Did you really?
Yeah, and every year, the last 10 years, I get hired by this wonderful Jewish temple out in Kloster for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and so every September, it's like they book me for all this wonderful work with the kids, and we do drumming and some basic breathing. It's still yoga to me. It's just another facet. So like I said, when you make a list of all of your skill sets, then you start to hopefully the light bulb starts going off about, wow, service here. Wow, that's a service. And then you just got to find the audience and then you got to sell.
So when you made your list, what did you end up with that you started to focus on?
Just this ongoing integration of music and yoga and the nervous system. Because for me, and as we all know, the stuff that most people are challenged with, obviously, is stress-related sleep. Mm-hmm. Digestion, elimination. SDE, not STTs.
STDs?
STDs, not that. Sleep, digestion, elimination. I mean, those three, I mean, that is the foundation of health and survival. Every organ you need or else you die. But those three systems are parasympathetic nervous system response.
All right, well, let's get back to your list. The things that you were going to focus on, your skills, your talents as you created your yoga business. What was on your list?
Obviously yoga, yoga workshops, therapeutic yoga, and then not, but again, obviously starting in the yoga center world, like how you could bring those things, and then obviously the utilization of sound, vibration, to make the Shavasana a very, very deep sensory shamanic experience, just because my healing path, again, was about parasympathetic nervous system training, always just coming back to this ease, not dis-ease, within the body, and how do all these different practices and techniques and styles and approaches work complementary with music. So once I figured out a class workshop structure with sound, then obviously the first step was to then evolve that into yoga centers and healing centers. And then because of my background with kids and trauma, I was just, you know, I was always good at seeing an area that needed it. Mm-hmm. And so I made brochures. I made, you know, I did the research. I had principles, military. I'm Gemini. I can talk. I can sell anything I believe in. And I was passionate about what I was seeing. Like, okay, I could then, if I change this and turn this into half lecture, little bit of PowerPoint. I really don't like PowerPoint. I maybe put like one or two slides and the rest is just this, you know, thing with sound. So just presentations became a service, and then figuring out how to do them, where to do them, and then the art of negotiation and being able to, you know, that's a skill in and of itself, to be able to negotiate a fee and love yourself and know to know your worth, but also find that number that works for both parties if their budget isn't as high as what you think you're worth. And that's an art, and that's just something that you just can't expect. Like, you're always going to get your fee. The work is what's most important. The service, the presentation, the workshop, whatever it is, the teacher training, you know, you got to find a number that is not a sliding scale, but just as a range. And you, but if you're putting the heart's investment in knowing that this is what you do, the money always works out.
Okay.
I believe. It just, there are those moments where you're like, oh, no, God, you know, but it's the ebb and flow.
Now, there are some people that get into this business that have a, not a love-hate relationship with money, just a hate-hate relationship with money.
And I'm sorry to hear that. I mean, to me, like I said earlier, joking around, it's a piece of paper with a president's face on it. And to me, it's just very beautifully designed toilet paper. We use it, we spend it, we move it. You know, it's funny, when people complain about money, I often just kind of ask, well, especially if they live in New York City or New Jersey, and they go back and forth. I go, well, how did you go to work today? I'm like, well, I crossed the GW. I'm like, well, you realize somebody built that? And now you can cross that bridge to go teach your yoga class, and then you get some money, and maybe you bought a tabla, or, you know, or you saved up to buy a harmonium with your teaching income that you drove across through the Lincoln Tunnel to get one in New York City. I go, so don't tell me you hate money. It's a tool. And when you see it as a tool of service and spiritual, I mean, obviously you got to define what success means. And if you're a real power hungry narcissist and want to conquer the world, you'll take the Bernie Madoff route and wield your power in a very hurtful way and take and hurt. And it affects all of us because the whole system feels that. The mortgage bubble was tough after 2008 when that thing hit, mid 2010 was when my clients were like, we're pulling back. And I was like, ooh. And so then I'm thinking like, okay, I got to come up and reinvent some of these services and bring it down and work with the pricing. So you're always in this ebb and flow. But the thing is, if you're committed to sharing the knowledge and the work or the presentation, you find that it's just what you have to deal with. Mm-hmm. Because the money will always be there in some way. You just have to figure out this beautifully creative, outside-the-box way of just constantly be willing to be flexible with your fees. One year, I got a $30,000 grant.
Wow.
It was beautiful. I was like, oh, something is shifting. I'm like, wow. And it was beautiful work. It was from a state agency to do all this trauma work with kids and women in domestic violence. And it did get a little problematic. I mean, it's a good business conversation just because it deals with just intellectual property rights and how you set yourself up as a 1099 versus a W-2. I mean, if we want to talk about that, I mean, it's, sure. I think it's very valuable for anyone who's going to be a full-time teacher, practitioner, or yoga business, or yogapreneur, or whatever you want to call yourself. There was an interesting, and I'll try to be very, very diplomatic in how I talk about this particular project. But the first year was fantastic, and my colleague, who was an old friend, knew I was doing all this work with just helping people with these, you know, trauma-related issues, anxiety, sleep, digestion, elimination. And for me, they're all the same thing. It doesn't matter where the trauma came from. We're now looking at the effects and the impact on the body. And so I just can see that for what it is without, and see that everything's awesome. You're great. Let's just do this way, and we'll figure this out. We'll help the body, because the body wants to be heard. That's what it's about to me. The body is calling for support. It's yearning for love. So we do this great year with these trauma clients, and we get really great results. And there was something very, I think, healing for this group of women who obviously hate men because they were in domestic violence situations. And I would go in and apologize for the male gender and the species, because there are good men who would never do something like that. And to set that tone of respect, it really worked well for that particular project, because we really were able to get into the work. Every Wednesday I drove like an hour and a half in traffic up Route 80 out into this general area where we are in New Jersey, and spend 2 hours doing all this work with sound and yoga. And then getting into some of the philosophy, because when somebody is suffering and they finally come to the strength to say, why did this happen? And why did I attract this situation? Why did I marry this person? Well, because, you know, when people get to a point where they can actually see their part, because if you don't love yourself, odds are you're going to attract someone who's going to take advantage of you. Mm-hmm. And that's just cause and effect. And that happens in business. That happens in all types of things. So in this particular environment, it was a beautiful first year journey to get them. They all were sleeping again, and they were all starting to be hopeful about the process of being on their own, raising their own kids, getting a job. One woman had to get a driver's license, never drove a car. So little things that we take for granted, you help nudge. And we had all this great stuff happening, and we put it in a 1 year, first year report for the board of directors at the agency. And they were blown away. They're just like, this is great. This is incredible. Like, what do we got to do to keep this going? And so we just kind of laid out year two, what we're thinking, and shook everyone's hand. And then I leave the room, and then they talk to the main executive director of programming who hired. And then they're like, I find out this later. They're just like, so how do we get this program?
They wanted to take the program.
Hmm. And so, and when I found out, I was like, wow, I felt that one right across the bow of the court, across the gut. And I took a step back and I said, well, you have really nice people on a board, but, you know, one's a plumber, one's a lawyer, one's a teacher and a principal, and they have no training or understanding of any of this work. And so they're basically just applying a basic business thing that happens a lot in business. Well, thank you, but why do we need to keep paying you if we can just, you know, replicate this? So, and when I found out, I wrote them a very polite letter and I said, well, it'll never be the same thing because I'm the talent.
Right.
You have to clone me. And we're not there yet. So until that happens, this conversation is going nowhere. What you could have done is said, hey, how can we partner with you to bring you to train our staff and other social workers on how to do this and then get it into the agency systems throughout the state? I said, we can do that. That's a great conversation. That's a tribal conversation. That's a win-win-win situation conversation. That's how I play business. That's how I play ball. Because if one side feels cheated or gypped or not fully represented properly, the deal won't work out. There'll be resentment, and for where they're at, they're not spiritual. They don't even understand this type of business rapport. They just wanted to take. And so it's not yours to take. Don't you understand that? He says, that's why I stay 1099. And I'll say, if anyone who's listening, 1099. If you have a method, or maybe you have some success with a particular approach, I mean, nobody really owns anything per se. It's the same stuff that's been around. It's just maybe you come up with an innovative idea within a system. But if it creates something that allows you to create a living and provide an honorable service so that you're making good, honorable money and somebody wants to try to take it, it's just like, you gotta put that strong third chakra boundary up, and homie, don't play that.
Now,
pause for a second. Tell me what you mean by, well, tell everyone else.
Hi, that may not everybody. Know.
What do you mean by 1099?
1099 is an independent consultant. So when you're on your own providing services and you're not typically working in one set place, you do a 1099 business relationship with that yoga center, with that nonprofit, or because you're doing different projects and you're doing them in different places and you're not employed by one particular group or organization or center. That's why you do the 1099 paperwork at the end of the year instead of the W-2. It's a W-9. You fill that out. And then the 1099 establishes you as a contractor, not an employee. Because it's like, let's say you created something very innovative within yoga, but you were a full-time employee of a center, or you say Kripalu or a Mega. Technically, they have dibs to that information. This is why a lot of adjunct professors stay adjunct, because like the pressure to publish and create something that the university can take part in is there if you're a full-time tenured full-time professor at a W-2. They can pay you benefits. So there's some wiggle room there that they kind of have their dibs on anything you do.
Okay.
That creates, you know, notoriety or success.
Sure. So the W-2 provides security because it usually comes with either a salary or an hourly wage.
Yeah.
You might get some insurance. You might get other benefits.
Yeah.
But you lose a lot of your autonomy to the person paying that salary.
Exactly.
When you're a 1099, you're an independent contractor, and then you have complete and total freedom, but you may not have a consistent and steady paycheck.
Yes.
Unless you're out there making those calls and pounding the
pavement. And that's the difference between, like, if you were to present both those options to maybe a Virgo versus a Gemini or a Capricorn versus a Libra, you know, the air and fire signs are typically movement-orientated energies. Water and earth have a stabilizing energy to them, you know. So it's all about your personal thing. I learned that I'm not cut out for 9 to 5. I work hard. Like, I love what I do, and I work every day at what I love to do on my terms. Mm-hmm. When I saw that my body just could not get with the 9 to 5 direct deposit program, I felt bad. It was just like, because my sister's successful. She's now a CFO of a big, you know, corporation, and I love her. She's a great person to bounce ideas off because she's so just together that way. But I'm not wired that way. Right. And so for years, that was part of the struggle and the stress to embrace the autonomy and figure out how to do this.
Yeah.
And then it gets easier.
And yeah, I think that if for people that have surrounded themselves with W-2 people, that's the world you know. To do anything else might feel scary, alien, uncharted territory.
And that's what we were getting into with that board. And I said, look, I'm so happy you're excited at what you see and you talk about saving money. But look at it this way. That first $30,000 grant that came in that year, that's money you wouldn't have gotten anyway. It was because the application talked about me, my program, my success. And that's why we got the grant to do this for these kids and these women. And so next year we got to get another grant. So it's not your money. It'll never be your money. You're not spending any money out of your bottom line organizational money. It's not coming from the agency. This is money that it's not taking from your pot. It's money that's floating out there that's available for programs like this. So what are you talking about?
So there was no benefit to them taking it.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
But in their mind, it was all about ego and like, hey, let's do this ourselves and blow this up. Like, let the people who know how to do it, do it.
Right.
And you're not paying. You know, it's coming from grant funding that you wouldn't have gotten. It was just, you couldn't, like, and they're like blank face. I'm trying to explain. Don't you see? And it was really interesting. So that's when I knew. And then they fired her, the colleague of mine who hired me, because nobody would play ball with their plan. And they couldn't legally get at it because I'd have, like, I'm just little magic Harry Potter here. Just let me do my thing. Let me do my little magic. I just love what I do. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Just let the people who have certain skills, let them shine. Let them do what they do. And then we had to take all these kids and these women, and we had to, like, Harriet Tubman Underground Railroad into my friend's living room because they ended the program. They abandoned all these wonderful people who were actually having incredible breakthroughs in their trauma process. And so they cut their nose despite their face. They were willing to let these clients just hang, all because they couldn't get my program. That was a big lesson for me.
Yeah.
big lesson.
So you kept the program going on the quiet underground.
We just kept going. Said, well, she got released. She got fired because she took my side of the debate in the situation. And I love her. She's my friend for life. She's now an incredible social worker, married, and she adopted a kid through the DIFA system down and lives in Florida. And she's very successful. She's a good person. So we stay in touch and nothing but love. But that 3 years of working with that group, the second year was in her living room. And then she was able to find a small little office space. And then for year three, we moved it in there. It was all about, you know, on average, you need a good 2 to 3 years with a group of people of consistent yoga, sound, holistic, therapeutic approaches to really help rebuild that hope and strength and maybe balance certain aspects of the endocrine system so that they can function and get back into life again. Mm-hmm. You know, it's great work. It's exhausting. So, I mean, when that chapter closed, it was like, okay, I'm taking a break from this work for a while. You know, and it all seems to kind of flow in and out. Like some years I'm doing more of this with the yoga and sound and it's more yoga center based, then that slows up and then some project comes in. So I just try to trust. And then I have time to make music. And then I'm working with my friends Suda and Ed at their ashram in Reading with the yoga therapeutic training programs that they have.
That's Reading, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, yeah. So like all these relationships after all these years, you just see the ebb and flow. And the fire is really has just, again, trusting. I'm being, you know, Michelangelo is chipping away at me to just continually keep evolving.
We will leave the conversation there for now. Keep an eye out for the posting of the second half of the conversation with 13 Hands, a.k.a. Dalian. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. You will find links to some of the topics that we covered in the show notes on the website, yogamat.chat. If you did enjoy the episode, the most valuable way that you can show your appreciation is by spreading the word. You can share the episode in whatever social media you utilize. You can give a review or a rating wherever you listen to the episode. You can subscribe to the podcast so that new episodes will automatically download. And you can follow us on our social media by searching for Chats from the Mat. I would like to thank Zoe for providing the introduction. You can find a link to her information in the show notes. A special thanks to 13 Hands for giving us permission to use their song Big Love in the opening and closing of the episode. You can learn more about 13 Hands by going to their website, which is the number 13, the word hands.bandcamp.com. Thank you for joining us at Chats from the Mat, yoga-inspired conversations with me, Brian McCrae Davis. Listen up. Gather round, tell your friends I'm coming to town. I'm selling love, I'm peddling compassion. Just basic decent human interaction. It's not an occasion.